So I'm going to take a step kind of back out in focus a little bit. That was great to hear sort of the local state level of information, but I guess first of all, I'm really pleased to be here. I'm grateful for this opportunity to kind of share what EPA is doing with indicators and sort of tackling the communication challenges with climate change and all that's wrapped up in that. So I'm going to start with some key messages that I hope sort of shine through as I go along here. Indicators are a really powerful tool for communicating really complex information, kind of summarizing and condensing, making it more accessible for the general audience, really the general public. We need to connect the science to the people, make it relevant to them, explain the relevance. Don't just be showing temperature graphs, but how does that affect you? How does that affect me, where I live, and what I do? We need more specific, more and more specific health-related indicators. We have a lot of information with the NCA coming out, with the third assessment, National Climate Assessment, just coming out, the IPCC coming out this year. There is health effects associated with climate change, and so we need more metrics. This report that EPA has done, which I'll talk about, is a little light in that category, and I'll explain some of the reasons for that. In general, we need some more health-specific, health-relevant indicators. And stay tuned for an ongoing effort that's going on right now with USGCRP. There's a scientific assessment, a special topic area on climate change and human health, and I'll explain that a little bit towards the end. So let's just start with some basics and linking climate change and health together. Climate change is happening now, and the evidence is very clear across a wide range of observations. This was really emphasized in the National Climate Assessment that just came out. And human activities are largely responsible for recent climate change. These are pretty well established now from the scientific literature, from the major scientific assessments. And our lives, importantly, our lives are connected to climate. So this is where we need to come in and connect health to these changes that we're seeing. Human health effects are associated with climate change. There's a critical need to communicate this information and what might be happening to human health and society. So we need to make that connection. Why use indicators? They're effective. Again, it's a really effective way to simplify the science, provide a nice little graph, an analytical expression of the science, which will convey a lot of information. It provides context in the scheme of the historical record. It helps explain the type of changes that we see, that we're interested in, the patterns of change, the rates of change. Is the timing of certain events becoming more frequent, less frequent? Are we interested in the intensity of the events? And indicators are a great way to sort of tease that information out. It helps people to understand the relevance, and so we can put some context around the indicators and say why they're important. And sort of connect the dots between climate change, our lives and values. Why does this matter to me? It is not just about calving icebergs in the Arctic. This is about changes that are happening a little bit closer that might be relevant to you and I. And it provides the foundation, as Paul was talking about, for making decisions, informing action, and just further investigation. So about the report, just real quickly, the primary goal, the simple foundational goal is to communicate and communicate the causes and effects of climate change in a really easy to understand way. There's 30 indicators that we summarize. There's over 40 graphs and figures and maps and things associated with those 30 indicators. And we're telling the complete climate story. We get the data. EPA really only contributes the greenhouse gas emissions data to this report, and we're getting it from federal and non-federal agencies across the U.S. and abroad. And so this data is coming from peer-reviewed, publicly available sources, and it draws from and is consistent with the latest National Climate Assessment. We had the benefit, again, of those things coming out this year, and so we're consistent with the science there. But what makes us be able to call these climate indicators and then house them under a sort of a common framework or report is that they all possess sort of these qualities. They're all derived from observed and measured data. So there's no future projections here. We sort of stop the story at present. We don't have to explain scenarios, modeling. We have people that sort of mistrust modeling and predictions in the first place, but not that that's not important. It's super important. But just trying to stick with observed data, it's very understandable to people. They all demonstrate a strong link to climate. So these are, the majority of them are kind of like detection type indicators where we're seeing a climate signal or what we would expect with a warming climate. So these changes are consistent with that. They all, again, rely on peer-reviewed, publicly available sources of data, and peer-reviewed science, and they meet certain data criteria that we are looking for so that we can tease out a trend so that the data completeness is there and uncertainty is documented and things like that. And then the whole report undergoes a separate peer review, an independent peer review. So peer-reviewed information going through another peer review. So it's fairly well vetted. Who uses this information? The top three users since we released the report have been the general public, educators, students, and government agencies at all levels have requested the report. EPA uses it all the time. Data contributors, people that have their data or their work in here can point to it and say, oh, yes, our program does have relevance. Look, EPA is publishing it. And so there's a win-win relationship there. Media blogs will pick it up. And so it gets out there and is available to people. This is just the set of 30. Don't worry about reading these or figuring them all out, but this is how we categorize them all by chapter. And again, we're telling the whole story. We're going from greenhouse gas emissions and atmospheric concentrations all the way down to ecosystem processes. What is happening to bird wintering ranges? Are they shifting or moving due to winter temperatures? So we're trying to tell the whole story here. And this chapter has just emerged with this recent report, and we're pretty happy about it. We've been able to finally collect some information on health and health-relevant measures, only two of which are actually tracking a health outcome. The others are more health-relevant. So with heat-related deaths and Lyme disease, we just need to do some more work in this area, and it's partly to do with the criteria that we've set for the report, but this is an area, emerging area, that we're hoping to expand on. Here's just the same thing, same six chapters, but I'm just showing graphs of all of them just to show you sort of the breadth of what we're talking about. This is only about half of the graphs and maps and things that are in the report. But, you know, we're just showing the comprehensiveness of the information in here. If I'm from Fargo, North Dakota, I'm not interested necessarily, or ocean pH is not necessarily in my daily life, or even sea level rise for that matter, but maybe growing season, the length of the growing season, or can I play hockey on the ice like I used to when I grew up on the lake ice? So there's depending on where you are, what you're doing, and what is relevant to you, there's information in here. It's also, again, to just provide the breadth of the changes that we're seeing globally and in the U.S. So now I'm just going to preview some of the indicators that are in the report. This is atmospheric concentrations of CO2. And we've got a long-term record back 800,000 years, and you can see present-day concentrations just ramping up since the Industrial Revolution. Almost all of this increase is due to human activities. You can show this same pattern and trend for methane and nitrous oxide, but here, so they're at unprecedented levels and continuing to go up. High and low temperatures. This is an indicator in that weather and climate chapter, and we're all used to seeing global mean temperature graphs and average temperature. The average temperature record. Here we're looking at a different part of the distribution, a very high 10% distribution of unusually hot summer temperatures in this time period. This is part of NOAA's Climate Extreme Index. It's showing daily highs and daily lows, both climbing in recent decades. The daily lows, so the overnight lows, are increasing a little bit more. This is this could mean more AC at night. It's not cooling off as much at night as it used to. And this is happening over more and more of the U.S., so that's a percent of land area. There are implications for agriculture as well, maybe more irrigation necessary. So another kind of depiction of high and low temperatures is something that resonates a little bit more with the public. Record temperatures, record highs, and record lows. We're all familiar with when this happens. We seem to be at a record low here in New Orleans today. But if the climate is stable and things are equal, the ratio is 1-to-1, and we see that sort of in the 50s. But over time, when you gather these records by station, by decade, you see a change happening. And in this last decade, we're seeing almost a 2-to-1 ratio of record highs to record lows. So we're getting a lot warmer temperatures occurring across the U.S. Here's another one. Not to beat this to death, unusually hot temperatures. Here we're looking at the 95th percentile, above the 95th percentile, so very hot temperatures. Days where the temperature is in the 95th percentile. And is that occurring more often over this time frame? And the increases are in red, decreases are in blue. But we give a spatial representation of this where you can see by station where this is happening. Just another way to slice the data. Here, in contrast, is record lows, cold temperatures. So it below the 5th percentile. You're looking at the extreme lows, and that's uniformly going down across the U.S. There is very little pattern except for a few isolated spots in the southeast where that is going up. So it's just another way to look at the temperature record rather than just global mean temperature change. This all sort of leads into a health metric that's very relevant here, and that's heat-related deaths. And we have, this is data collected by CDC, and it's from the death certificate records, and we can see the trend over time. We know there are certain limitations to this data, but this is clearly a well-established link. Excessive heat and morbidity and mortality are very well-established, and there's reasons for looking at it. The Chicago 1995 heat wave, sort of well-studied heat wave, sort of explains why we need to look a little closer. Death certificates don't actually capture the full burden of an event like this. There was a lot of excess deaths that weren't necessarily recorded on their death certificates. So it just shows that we need to take a closer examination of these events and be prepared. This is heavy precipitation. This is another component to NOAA's Climate Extreme Index. And again, we're looking at that top 10% of one-day precipitation events. So this is occurring with more frequency. It's becoming more common across more of the U.S. in recent decades. 9 of the top 10 years for extreme one-day precipitation events occurred since 1990. Relative sea level. So this is a nice way to present sea level change, and this is tied to 60 or 70 tide gauges across the U.S., indicating the change in sea level for this 60-year period. This is relative sea level, so we're measuring sea level in relation to land elevation change. So in some areas you see subsidence of land, or some areas you see an uplift in land, and so it's reflective of that. Nevertheless, along the Atlantic coast and in the Gulf, we see a lot of changes. The red arrow is indicating 8-inch increases in sea level. Snowpack. Every April 1st, they go out and measure snowpack. This is over 700 sites in the mountainous western U.S., and they measure snowpack, and they've been doing this for years. So over this time period, over 75% of the sites are seeing a decline in snowpack. this has water resource implications if you're reliant on water from snowpack for various reasons. And there is some variation. Obviously, the Sierra Nevada of California is seeing some increases, but by and large, we're seeing some decreases over that time period. Lyme disease is another one of the health metrics that we have that is actually tracking a health outcome. This is the incidence of Lyme disease in the United States, which has nearly doubled since 1990. You see the depiction of the two maps of the two different years, sort of a before and or early and present, and see how the number and distribution of Lyme disease change. Now, one thing to mention here and caution is climate may be just a small fraction of the cause of this trend or this increase. There is an increase in awareness of Lyme disease. There's more being reported. There's a larger intersection of human and deer populations, the suburban areas. So there's a lot of things going on that may be driving these numbers, but the science is very strong that vector-borne diseases, climate-sensitive diseases will change with changes in climate. Fiber. Okay, so ragweed pollen season, you may have seen this too in the National Climate Assessment. This is a great study that was tracking the length of the ragweed pollen season. So they're actually going and counting pollen. They collect it on filters, they go to the laboratory, somebody is counting this. What's happening is fall frost is happening later in the year, increasing the overall length of the pollen season. So the plant is flowering more, possibly more with more concentrated pollen, but nevertheless more. And as you move north, the days increases. So by the time you get up into Canada, you're looking at over 20 days increase in the pollen season in just this short time frame. A closer look in community connection. This is sort of our way of sort of bringing it home, giving some relevance to some of this data. So we took a little time out in the report in between all of the indicators. So look at the Southwest. It's very sensitive to temperature and drought. Here are the trends, the recent trends, compared to the historical trends. And why is that meaningful? What are the implications of that? Lake Mead, I think, hit the record low last year in water levels. And then another example, so cherry blossoms in Washington, D.C., we all fret over when those cherry blossoms are going to be in peak. And the National Park Service has been collecting that data for years, and it's just to sort of point out the long-term record is something that we're concerned with. It provides a significant meaning. And so that's how we've framed some of the features in the report. So this is the climate and health assessment I was just mentioning at the very beginning. This is an interagency effort of the USGCRP. They've identified climate change impacts on human health as a very high priority and the subject of this sort of special interim report. And agencies need more definitive and quantitative information on the impacts of climate change, and the health impacts of climate change and for the U.S. In particular. This is a key goal for the President's Climate Action Plan. And so if you want more information, there is a little session, I think, tomorrow night, the town hall meeting where they're going to discuss this among many other topics. But this will be on there. It's Tuesday night at this location. Available resources, I shamelessly printed reports that Paul did not, so I'll have to, bike home to make up the carbon. But we have reports. You can order them. They're free. Check out the website. The figures, everything is downloadable and shareable. And we sort of have this full report, a brochure, and a sort of a fast key points page. And with that,